Scott Butler uses New Orleans as the backdrop for his first novel, King Cake Baby. He knows that city well. He spent the first 35 years of his life there, a 10th-generation New Orleanian. King Cake Baby weaves through the Crescent City in 1949, 1966, and 1984 with a deep family secret at its core. When Elizabeth Rochelot's child is stillborn, she takes another baby on Fat Tuesday, 1949. The title of the book refers to the long-held tradition of finding a small baby figurine inside a Mardi Gras cake. The narrative follows the family as the stolen child becomes an adult and a family counselor. Over the course of 35 years, the family secret changes lives. Scott F. Butler now lives in Bentonville, and last week he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about his first novel.
When I was in New Orleans during my graduate work, I was the executive director of an adoption agency. And so my wife and I were intimately involved in that and placed over 300 children at the end of it, and probably had a good 150 children in our home for various durations of time in foster care. And so as I began to write an outline for the book, adoption or foster care had to be a part of it because it was such an intimate part of our life.
The characters, the native New Orleans characters in this book, especially the more modern day ones, you write in New Orleans dialect.
I do.
Which is called Yat. Right.
Yeah, which is similar to a New York or an England. It's a port city dialect. Mm-hmm. And so the easy way of describing it is to say that it's just lazy speech. Mm-hmm. Window becomes winda. So it's leaving the E and R off the end of a word. It's substituting the beginning of a word with the ending of the last word. So where are you at becomes where yat. And so the yat the yat description of the language comes from that expression in New Orleans when folks are meeting each other. Instead of saying hello or how are you, they say, where you at?
Were you at all concerned that readers who are not familiar with that dialect might get lost in the first few pages?
You know, I was. And several folks that read it for me professionally recommended that I take the dialect out completely. And if you look at the current rendition of the novel, It is much less than what it was at one point. So I did peel that back a great deal. But in order to be true to, I guess, my upbringing and how interesting that culture was, I thought I needed to leave some of it in. And so what I'm told by folks who aren't from New Orleans who have read it is that it slows them down a little bit, but it certainly adds to the complete character of the novel.
What I found interesting was when we're finding out about the incident in 1949, there's a hint of Gothic drama because there's this secret and this drunk who kind of knows the secret but kind of doesn't, and he kind of pays for knowing about it. Mm-hmm. But the 1984 version doesn't have that. It's a very much more modern sort of story. Was that intentional?
Yeah, it was. I thought that the Gothic, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. At one point, she leaves the stillborn child in a closet while she goes back to the Mardi Gras. And I think
But I do want to interject here. None of it is over the top.
No.
I mean, you hear Gothic and you think none of that. So I just wanted to let listeners know that.
Well, I appreciate that. No, I think that there was sufficient amount of it in that 1949 narrative that what I wanted to do is bring some normalcy to this gentleman's life who had gone through having been stolen from the Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. And so the evolution that came from what happened to him, the impact that it had on his mother and by extension the entire family – allows the reader to see that as he grows into maturity in 1984, he's pretty much put all the pieces into place. Now, there's still an underlying struggle that I think is paralleled in the book by the patients that he sees in his current practice.
They say, right, what you know New Orleans. You also know the mental health industry as well. Mm-hmm. And so you make the adult Bobby someone who's involved in that.
That's right. And what I wanted to do in that sense is by bringing patients into his office, the reader gets to see and understand what he's thinking and how his struggles with the issues that his patients bring in interact with his own issues about having an idea that something's going on with his own family, but not really knowing what it is. The secret, if you will, doesn't come out until much later, until the very end of the book. Mm-hmm. And then the reader has the ability to see how it impacts him and what, I guess, he eventually does with that information.
What I really liked about the patients he sees is they don't have unbelievable problems. Mm-hmm. These are common people mm-hmm. who have a problem with the relationship or are worried about a niece, something like that.
And that again, parallels back to the way the novel starts in that one of his patients in particular is a young lady who is being raised by her aunt. And the reader comes to find out the issues that are going on with the aunt and with this child's mother and how that part of the book processes itself into having an understanding about what happens in the beginning of the book.
When did you know that the conclusion of the book, and we won't give anything away here, was going to go the way it does, the family coming together and the secrets slowly coming out then?
As I wrote, I had a general idea of where I wanted it to go. I think ultimately it was probably a good year and a half into writing that I kind of had that aha moment, and I saw the opportunity to draw the two narratives together, mm-hmm. which culminates, really when you think about it, in a similar ending for both the mm-hmm. initial 1949 narrative as well as the 1984 narrative that mainly takes place with Bobby through the lives of a family of patients that he sees. So the little girl he sees in counseling, but he also sees her aunt and uncle, and he also sees a great uncle. And so it's through that ending that I saw the opportunity to bring it all together.
Did you have this novel in you your whole life?
I think I had a novel in me, and I didn't realize what it was going to be until I moved here to Northwest Arkansas, which my wife and three girls have lived here for the past nine years. But having lived in New Orleans my whole life, being a 10th generation New Orleanian, it is in us, mm-hmm. so to speak. And as a result, once removed from that, for work, I travel a lot, and I tell folks that I've written the book on in five different countries and in 22 different states. And so part of traveling for me on the plane and in the hotel rooms at night, I just started writing, and that's what it evolved to.
We've made much about the New Orleans setting, but you don't have to be familiar with New Orleans. New Orleans is the setting and perhaps a character, but this is a universal story. This could have been set in New England or the Ozarks.
Without a doubt. I like the way you put that. It's New Orleans is simply a character in the novel, and if you've been there, you'll appreciate some of the atmosphere that I write about. But if you've never been to New Orleans or know very little about it, this is an opportunity for you to be educated about it, because a good bit of the book goes into some of the more important aspects of New Orleans that I think folks would like to learn about: the food, the culture, how important family, because many of us are 5 and 6 and 7 generation New Orleanians, the family then becomes an overlay of everything that goes on in life. So as a kid, if it was the weekend, we were going to some family member's house, and we were boiling crawfish or crabs or shrimp or frying catfish, and it just became a part of who we all are. I talk to my siblings and cousins today, and we tell each other we're stuck in the past, because it was such a rich environment to be raised in that my ability to, I guess, come to terms with the absence of that being up here came out in the book.
Finally, we've talked about how you have cuisine and dialect and culture, but any New Orleans resident with his or her salt, worth his or her salt, also has another passion. And these two words sum it up: Mike Lansford.
Absolutely.
If you're a Saints fan, you
Absolutely.
Know who that was.
And Mike Lansford is in the book. The Saints the Saints have struggled for so many years. Here recently, of course, hell is frozen over.
Right.
And we finally got our big Super Bowl win. But back in the early 80s, the Saints had finally gotten to the point where they made the playoffs. And the ability for them to go further was as a result of a kick that Mike Lansford made, which put the Saints out of contention And anyone in New Orleans who follows the Saints can tell you that. The other Saints-related issue in the book would be Tom Dempsey's kick. And, of course, Tom Dempsey at the time held the record for the longest field goal against the Detroit Lions. And my dad and my grandpa were at the game, but, of course, were trying to beat the crowd out. So they were walking out of the stadium, didn't see the kick, but heard the crowd erupt. And
that was at the Sugar Bowl, right?
That's right, yeah. In Tulane Stadium. And so I had to bring that into it. And did so, I hope, in what folks will see as a unique way with some of the characters.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on your first novel.
Well, I do appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Scott F. Butler's novel is titled King Cake Baby and is available at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville and online at kingcakebabybook.com. You can hear more from our conversation, including why he included certain New Orleans-specific terms like snowball and halfway up the shells in his book. That is at our webpage, OzarksAtLarge.com.